Mbani. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Telecommunications and Postal Service. I'm going to ask my colleague to introduce herself, and then we'll ask honorable members to introduce themselves as we start the meeting, so that we can begin with our meeting today. We will outline the program. I will be chairing the morning session of today. My co-chairperson will chair the afternoon session of today.
Good morning, everyone. We know that it's a full house today. We hope it's a good morning to all of you. Good morning, honorable members. We have a full day program for today, and with all the entities that have to present. And of course, you'd see that there's also stepping around in terms of presentations. We want to greet you and hope that while as Parliament we are on the budgetary process, we are going to receive a fruitful day from all of you, maximum cooperation, and also from the members as well. This mammoth task will be able to handle it diligently. We will be assisted by Honorable Kensani Kubai, Mamuloko here, for the latter part of the day, and I will rejoin you later today. My name is Joyce Moloi Moropa. I'm the chairperson for the Portfolio Committee for Communication.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Shall I request members to introduce themselves?
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Minister. Everybody. My name is Lindiwe Masego. I'm a member of the Telecommunication and Postal Services Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
My name is Tikile Kitsotesi, member of the Telecommunication Committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mapule Mafolo. I'm the member of the Telecommunication and Postal Services. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Nomuzana Dongeni. I'm serving on both committees. Thank you.
Morning. My name is Moses Tsei. I'm part of the Communications Committee.
Pule Mave, Telecommunications and Postal Services.
Good morning, I'm Gavin Davis and I'm on the Communications Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, I'm Mary Anderson. I'm on the Telecommunications and Postal Services Committee.
Morning, I'm Veronica van Dijk. I'm the Communications Committee.
Good morning, I'm Cameron McKenzie. I'm on the Telecommunications and Postal Services Committee.
Good morning, Mwise Ndlozi. I'm in both committees and I'm from the EFF.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Tumi Ngwana, serving on communications.
Kotso, Lebitso la ka ke nna Big Boy Jika, serving on communications.
Thank you very much, honorable members. I'm going to outline our program for today. We are going to start with the MDDA presentation, followed by, as I hope colleagues from MDDA would move. This is the laptop that we're going to use. If they can swiftly move into and show through their presentation, so that we can start. How we are going to proceed is that we are going to take a presentation from the entity. Following that, we will engage with that particular entity. What I would request is that immediately, I'm hoping the board chairperson is here, would introduce the delegation, all of it, that is here, and then we proceed from there. We take the presentation. After the presentation, members will definitely engage with the presentation. Honorable members, the presentation will be taken together with what has been tabled the strike plan and the annual performance plan. Are we ready to proceed? I don't see anything on the screen.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Nkupane Mapiri, from the MDDA, the CEO of the MDDA. May I request the Chair just to apologize that my board members are not here yet. They are making their way to the House. We've alerted them that the program has changed, that they needed to be here. So if the Chair could possibly just...
Clarify when you say program has changed? What do you mean?
I'm saying the program that the board members were sitting with, I think it was saying that the SABC was starting. But be that as it may, Chairperson, that I think be that as it may, Chairperson, just to humbly request the House to allow us to get the members of the MDA board to be present in the House.
I think the program just listed the entities we are seeing. It was saying these are the people we are seeing on the day. It didn't give a particular order. Because I'm co-person who made the program. And my understanding of the letters that have went to entities did not give you a time of your presentation. It said you needed to be here from 9 o'clock. That's my understanding. Hence, I was trying to understand what you are explaining. Shall we start with Santec then if MDDA is not here? But I think in future, colleagues would rather appreciate that we have a better way of operating. If a meeting is starting at 9, if there would be a request for a particular entity to come later, that it be made formally. Because it's just unacceptable that a correspondent did not give you a time. If you wanted a time, you should have requested the time. So it's really an inconvenience from the committee. I'm not so sure if colleagues from, I see the board chairperson is here, if colleagues from Santec would be ready to proceed. Okay, thank you. Let's give over to Santec. Shall we ask the board chairperson to maybe start by introducing colleagues to the team while we get in the technology setup?
Well, good morning, honorable chairs, honorable members. My name is Thabo Mungake, the chairperson of the Santec board. I'm with some of the board members and an executive. I would take this opportunity also that
introduce themselves.
Thank you very much, Chairpersons and the members of the board committees. My name is Steve Mulala. I'm the non-executive director of Centec.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Rosani Rasakinya. I'm the chief financial officer of Centec.
Good morning, honorable chairs, honorable members, minister. My name is Hanki Matabane. I'm the chief operations officer of Centec.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Mr. Puchi Bukwebe. I'm the executive internal audit and compliance.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Koli Swadaku. I'm the board member for Centec.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Biso Mukwena, the acting company secretary of Centec.
Well, thank you very much. Honorable chair, we noted that you said you have a marathon of a lot of meetings. Without further ado, I'll give it over to CEO to make the presentation.
Still getting, but members have got copies of the presentation, isn't it? Okay, so it means we can start while waiting for technology to come back to us.
Good morning, honorable chairperson, honorable members, minister. My name is Tuma Mahapi, the CEO of Centec. Go through the presentation and I will go through the page numbering as we move along. Apologies. We are almost there here. Just on page 2, this is a presentation of our corporate plan for the next 3 years, starting with this financial year. And page 2 shows the is a table of contents about what we are going to cover. And for as I make the presentation, I may be even go into some of the details about what we do as a matter of just for background purposes. But what we typically provide is a background of the company purpose from a perspective of the company mandate. Making sure that every time, everything that we do is aligned with our mandate and extends our the objectives set to us by our shareholder. We'll also talk about the alignment of what we do to the shareholder priorities. We'll talk about what then informs our business strategy, looking at policy, regulatory, and general market data. Look at the specific business strategy items. Strategic infrastructure programs, and then the financial plan and the key performance indicators for this MTF period. On page 2, this is just a statement of compliance in terms of the submission of our corporate plan. The second bullet point there also talks to the fact that our corporate plan is informed by generally the MTSF goals. It's informed by the shareholder priorities. It's informed by the internal company objectives and also the interests of our other stakeholders, our customers and our employees. On page 4, continuing there, that for the period of the MTF period, our business strategy is informed by a statement that I will keep going back to, and this statement is really comes out of the development of the broadcasting industry, starting from the AAA inquiry, the white paper on broadcasting policy 1998, the Broadcasting Act, even the ECA as recently amended this year. Our job is to provide open access, interoperable communication platform services
to broadcasters primarily. And we do so in a way that enables our broadcasters and ourselves and our broadcasters, particularly the public broadcaster, to provide universal access to digital content and communication services to all South Africans. But we're also aware that the broadcasting system, the broadcasting sector, is undergoing some fundamental changes brought about by the digitization, particularly of the terrestrial broadcasting system. But also by the fact that people who consume content are beginning to require different ways of consuming that content. We know that our broadcasters and our customers require facilities, communication platforms, that allow them to touch their consumers at different parts of the day. For example, we want to make sure that the public broadcaster in particular is able to touch people and communicate to people throughout the day, not only just on the television screens. When we, for example, as we left our homes, we met the public broadcaster, and we'll typically just meet the public broadcaster again when we go home to watch on TV. But there are other ways of accessing media. So we are responding to that in general as a content, as a communication platforms service provider. The theme of our corporate plan is around digitization. We are in the middle of the migration of terrestrial television from analog to digital. We are aligning ourselves with the BDM, the Broadcast Digital Migration Policy, as it gets amended. The regulations from ICASA, including the frequency plan. I think I'm back. If I could just test. We've split our rollout program. I mean, the mandate from us in terms of DTT is containing the Broadcast Digital Migration Policy, which requires us to build the digital networks. These are the two networks for, on one hand, the public broadcaster and the community broadcasters, and then on the other hand, the commercial broadcaster, ETV and Mnet, noting that anybody who has a right to self-provide can, in fact, build their own network. The target for us in terms of network rollout, in terms of the frequency plan from ICASA, is that we should migrate the analog network so that it reaches 84%, and that the rest of the 16% should be covered by satellite, such that at least the public broadcasting services are available to everybody, everybody around the country. We are also rolling out four new sites that will increase the terrestrial coverage to just above 84%. Then we have been working with the broadcasting industry to develop alternative platforms on the back of the satellite gap filler for terrestrial television or general television. We have been working with the broadcasting sector for an independent, almost satellite television platform. We've also started doing trials on mobile television using the same standard that is used for digital terrestrial television. Again, that is our intention. There is to provide our customers with the ability to touch their customers in a cost-effective way throughout the day. We are beneficiaries of, that's on page 6, beneficiaries of the 2010 legacy funds, and we are using those funds to, one, implement a disaster recovery site. One of our sites, by the way, the main site for distribution content is a national key point in Hanichu, in Joburg, and we are using the funds from the World Cup to build a full disaster recovery site for that facility. But we're also using that facility to provide further platforms or to build more infrastructure to then enable our broadcasters to touch people, as I've described earlier. The next page, page 8, talks about our purpose, those are our purpose statements there. Our vision is to operate as a world-class entity in this sector, similar to any other original signal broadcasting signal distributor around the world, to provide sustainable communication platform services, not only in South Africa, but as we have seen with the digitization of terrestrial television, that there are opportunities for extending our the skills that we have developed and the capabilities that we have developed to the rest of the continent. Our mission statement is to provide, again, open access, interoperable communication platform services to our broadcasters and to work with them to push for affordable universal access to digital content services. And we are aware of the socio-political context. We are aware that there are still many places where people do not still have currently, and that will be sorted out in DTT certainly, do not still have television, do not still have the full scope of radio services that people in urban areas still do have. So we are driven by the imperatives of the country's developmental state. The next page, page 9, we also draw a mandate from the Act of Parliament. We were created in 1996. I must state that we come out of the SABC. We were part of the SABC and separated or created a separate entity under the Amendments and Tech Act in 1996. Originally, to provide signal distribution services in terms of the IBA, and later on to provide telecommunication services in terms of the Old Telecoms Act. But since the ECA, our mandate in terms of the law is just to provide electronic communication services and electronic network communication services in accordance with the ECA. I must say that the recently amended ECA then states that CENTEC is a common carrier. And within the ECA, then there are obligations not only of a signal distributor, but also of a common carrier. From a signal distribution point of view, the ECA requires us to implement open access interoperable systems that are harmonized within the region, or that, that work and enable connectivity, regional connectivity and regional harmonization. And as a common carrier, we are required to provide services in an equitable, reasonable, non-preferential, non-discriminatory basis. And we are also required to take into account in the construction of our tariffs the three different categories of broadcasting services, which is the public broadcasting services, the community broadcasting services, and also the commercial broadcasting services. In addition to that, we draw a mandate and our public service remit is also informed by various other regulations and legislation that govern, in particular, state-owned entities and companies in general. On page 10, we further our mandate is further drawn or sharpened by the our shareholder priorities, and we looked at those in a little bit more detail just now. We every year the our shareholder publishes a list of priorities in their annual in their corporate plan, and at the point at the time of completing our corporate plan, the at least there were five strategic goals that we thought we would respond to. I won't go into too much detail because we'll be getting into them just now. But just to the main important thing is to state that what we do not only comes out of the legislation that governs us, but also what is required of us from the shareholder. Lastly, what we do is informed by our customers, which are our primary stakeholders. We operate as a company, I must state. And in this respect, we the broadcasting system is changing quite significantly. And there's a lot of dynamics there, and we are working quite extensively with all our customers and partners to ensure that at the end of the day, the citizens of the country can benefit from the technology advancements. Then on page 13, that's a little bit more detail about how we intend to align with the shareholder priorities Maybe I shouldn't go into just reading through them. I'll just summarize the themes, particularly around how we intend to align ourselves on the issue of contributing to the creation of an inclusive economic growth through the development of policies and strategies. We are particularly interested in making inputs in at least three areas. The first one is the overall national integrated ICT policy review that deals with broadcasting and that deals particularly with signal distribution, but particularly in the convergence space. The second one, there's a big effort within the department on increasing the support for community broadcasting, and that will evolve as things change. And we provide signal distribution services to most of the community broadcasters. We understand their problems. We understand the sensitivity of the signal distribution costs to the cost of operating their services. We have previously reduced our tariffs to in line with the Electronic Communications Act, but we understand that that may not be enough. But the problem that we understand also and acknowledge that the issue may be a bigger issue, but to the extent that our inputs into the community broadcasting sector can assist them to be more viable, we are making those inputs continuously. The last part is on the digital content strategy. We currently, we're aware of, when one goes into digital terrestrial broadcasting, the number of channels increase quite significantly. And one of the drivers for the success of this expanded television systems is local content. And we're aware that as the more capacity comes into place, as its digital systems increase, there will be a need probably for more broader and more inclusive approach to local content development. So our interest there is in providing inputs on how the digital networks, as they increase, broadcasting networks as they increase, create opportunities for more local content development. And so we do react to the shoulder priorities on the content, digital content strategies locally. Page 15, I think page 14 is a repetition there. Page 15, the strategic objective of the shareholder there is to support and enable the provision of a multiplicity of ICT applications and services through facilitation of the modernization and deployment of infrastructure. Our theme for the next couple of years is digitization, not only of television but of radio, but also convergence, converging broadcasting services or creating platforms that allow the broadcasting services to converge into the bigger telecommunication services. And that creates opportunities for a lot of innovation, both in terms of service, in terms of applications, between the different sectors, broadcasters and telecommunication providers, and also entrepreneurs on the side working with the broadcasters and the bigger operators. Our platforms are necessarily open access and interoperable, and as a result, they naturally enable the provision of this multiplicity of ICT services. The other strategic objective is the development contribute to rural development through increasing universal access to ICTs. There is, we do work with the department on the ICT rural development strategy. Typically, our main input there has been on connectivity. We operate a satellite-based connectivity platform, and we typically make inputs there. On page 16, the strategic objective there is contribution towards the efficient management and usage of the national radio frequency spectrum, and we do it in a couple of ways. As the entity that runs the signal distribution networks, we run the radio networks. We know, understand how the frequencies are employed. So we work with the regulator and the industry in general to make the inputs on how, on the design of the frequency plan, not only for the first phase of DTT, but also for the future. And we are also quite keen to work with all the stakeholders to release the digital dividend as quickly as possible after the analog switch off. We understand that we know based on the current frequency plan that the digital dividend will not be immediately available, but we understand exactly and how to release that digital dividend. Most of that work will be happening on the Centec network. The 2.4, the strategic objective, improve the cost, quality, and availability and usage of ICTs. And our contribution there is on the tariff model. We are currently working with the broadcasters, on particularly the television broadcasters, on a new revised tariff model for DTT, where the broadcasters naturally, and as we expect, are putting us under a lot of pressure to ensure that the benefits of any benefits that may be available on the efficiency of digital systems show up in the cost that they face for signal distribution services. On page 17, contribute to the increasing ICT skills base, and we do it in a number of ways. We are working in collaboration in particular with externally with some tertiary institutions in terms of skills development at undergraduate, at postgraduate, and also at research level. But we also do have our own internal skills development systems. Facilitate the development of SMMEs. We are in the middle of overhauling our enterprise development strategy, particularly to look at and create awareness at a minimum and opportunities for local ICT SMMEs to participate in what we do. We operate quite unique infrastructure. I mean, for example, if you are interested in providing technology services to the mobile telephony system, you have at least maybe four entities that you can work with, and it's fairly similar technology. On fixed networks, you have at least two entities that you can work with that have scale, and a couple of others that have slightly smaller. In terms of signal distribution services, we're fairly unique there. We're the only ones that are doing, pretty much what we're doing at the scale that we're doing. So we feel that we have a particular, there's a particular requirement for us to go out and ensure that people are aware of what we do and they can participate in the work that we do. Page 18, I'll move a little bit faster. Provides work with the department to ensure that we operate efficiently and effectively, working with the SOE oversight department of the division of the department. We've had a fairly tough history over the years, but we've fairly come out of the woods over the last couple of years, and we intend to do so. It was last year that we got a clean audit for the first time in a very, very long time, probably in the first time in 10 years, and we intend to continue to do so, making sure that we run clean administration as a public-owned company. And lastly, we work with the Department on International Affairs. We've almost completed our migration project for DTT, and we've developed a number of skills, a number of solutions that we are quite unique to the requirements, in particular, that were unique in addressing the requirements that are contained in the BDM policy, and are particularly unique in addressing the requirements of digital broadcasting on the continent. And we, as part of then implementing the shoulder priority on international affairs, we are extending our, starting to extend our services outside. Then on page 20, we go into a little bit more detail about what then informs our strategic dimension. We look at the policy issues, we look at the regulatory issues, and also the general market issues. We are aware that there is, I mean, there are statistics that are normally a particular statistic that is normally mentioned around broadband about the correlation between broadband penetration, for example, and economic development. We view that not only just about broadband, it's about availability of digital systems, including digital broadcasting systems, whether they are delivered through broadband technologies or through just general broadcasting technologies. We agree. We believe that there is a significant economic benefit that can be generated through development of and implementation of such digital systems. So, on page 21, we look at the policy issues there. We have been participating in the ICT policy review, looking particularly at the issues related to signal distribution. And looking at the policy review, at least the last draft, looked at, in particular, the use of internet, not just broadcast signal distribution systems, internet as our alternative methods of distributing content. And we are responding accordingly to that, and we are aware that there is no way of going back on that front. From a policy review process, we are looking forward to long-term policy certainty, a policy environment that will then create a regulatory regime that will be drive for diversification and increasing ownership of the kind of systems that we support, which are the media and broadcasting systems. A policy environment that will provide certainty on the our location and our participation in any consolidation and streamlining of SOC infrastructure assets to enable efficient delivery of services. A policy environment that will also provide certainty on alignment of public and private ICT infrastructure to meet the requirements in particular of the NDP. From a regulatory point of view, we've just gone into a little bit more detail here, breaking the section into different markets. Looking at the radio market, that's on page 22 now. We are quite happy, and we've seen a lot of movement with the regulator. I state that over the last year, we continue seeing new community broadcasters coming into. Are being licensed or being provided with licenses. We've seen the secondary markets for FM radio. Those have been licensed also, and we are busy working with the licensees to roll out their networks. And we've also seen the medium wave licenses being issued. So those are very, very positive things going into the imperative for us, which is a clearer and a service licensing process across the board. We, as a signal distributor, we've seen issues around the, we've noticed some of the struggles of some of our customers. We mentioned community broadcasters and we're doing something about that. But sometimes even the regional broadcasters, commercial regional broadcasters, sometimes do struggle. And potentially as part of the overall policy review, perhaps together with the regulator, there could be a bigger market study on the state of the radio market to inform how the licensing happens, so that when people get licensed and we build networks for them and they are not able to survive, it does not then cause a problem for the state asset with losses. On television, the regulatory environment there is really on with respect to DTT. There is nothing there to say the DTT regulations have been published, and we are busy working towards fulfilling the requirements as a signal distributor. Just for background, the regulations uh, there are certain timelines in the regulations from a point of view of in respect of Centec or a professional distributor for broadcasting. The first thing is that we need to have completed or broadcasters should choose their signal distributor as allowed for by in the law, and we need to have the commercial agreements submitted to the regulator within 3 months of the pronouncement of the performance period by the minister. And we also need to have covered certain parts of the country with the terrestrial signals. We're almost there with most of those requirements. We believe that within 3 months of any pronouncement of the performance period, we should be able to fulfill all our obligations in terms of the regulations. We are working with the regulator on an old inquiry on wholesale transmission services for broadcasting services. Let me leave it that way. The regulator did make an inquiry about the market power that we have in signal distribution and potential opportunities for the regulator to regulate that. Signal distribution tariffs, we will continuously review them, but certainly with respect to television, we have come up with a completely new and different model for that. Then the page 24 is then an entry into the shape of the market based on the data there. The reason why we inquire about this thing is to be able to understand the pressures that some of our customers are facing in particular, and be able to prepare ourselves to address their problems to the extent that we can. As a signal distributor, as you see that there are a couple of dynamics that are happening, have been happening over in the sector over the last couple of years. I won't go into too much detail about this thing because it does the best people to talk about this is really the broadcasters. We on page 25, we have information about, we present information about the penetration of ICT services looking at broadcasting services in homes. Radio, television, future air television subscription, broadband landline, broadband on mobile and broadband on fixed, and then landline telephone. We know that the proliferation of radio and television sets in homes as a means of as a main means of people getting access to information. Then on page 25. We also now look at the listenership. I must say that when it says commercial there, that it includes both the public and commercial broadcasting services. We know, though, that the community broadcasting does account for a significant amount of listenership on a, this was on a particular 7-day period in June 2013. And that there is increasing but still small amount of or usage of other mediums like online and mobile phones as a method of accessing television or radio services. But community programming, the main message of the page 26 there is the amount of or the number of people who use community media to get access to that information. Then on page 27, that shows the growth in terms of advertising of revenue in radio. That is a general thing. Why this is important for us is that we understand that most of the broadcasters eventually pay for their signal distribution services out of the income that they get. Their income comes mostly from advertising. We need to understand when we sit with them and talk about our businesses moving forward, we need to understand the dynamics that is facing them in terms of how they're able to afford them, of how when they say that they can afford, for example, their signal distribution services, then this data gives us a sense of the extent to which they may be having problems. So the growth of advertising revenue gives us insight into the dynamics of our customers. We do have a number there, which is an estimate of 7.3%
aggregate growth between 2013 and 2017. But we're also interested in, on page 28, on the dynamic within the sector itself, the radio sector itself. Understanding, for example, that community media, much as we saw that the one piece of data set that they, caters for 25% of listenership, as of 2012, community media only received 2.4% of the revenue available to radio. And we, that's why we can understand when community radio stations come to us and say that the signal distribution services, where the average rate or the median rate for signal distribution, or the cost of signal distribution facing community radio, the median rate is about 3,000. When they say though that 3,000 rand per month is high, we do understand because they only get 2.4% of the revenue that is available for radio. We also understand that we also observe the dynamics on revenue share on between the public broadcasting services and also the commercial broadcasting services. Understanding again that the different requirements, either regulatory or strategic public service mandate, for example, of the public broadcaster, that creates a dynamic on both costs, on revenue, certainly on costs. For example, if the public broadcaster is supposed to go into certain places where they may not make as much revenue as they would, but the signal distribution costs don't see that. It does not matter whether the transmitter is in an urban area or in a rural area, the cost of running that will be the same. We are interested in this data to be able to deal with the problems that may come from that angle. On page 29, that looking at television, the and there is a particular dynamic there in the industry that most of the revenue, the cross between advertising revenue and subscription revenue, where subscription revenue in television became more than advertising revenue, happened just before 2007, and the gap is increasing, meaning that more money in television is going towards subscription revenue. In addition to that, it is well known that most of the, even the advertising revenue that is there, subscription broadcasters are able to take a piece of that. What the data shows is that it shows the increasing pressure that is faced by free-to-air broadcasters essentially in respect of advertising revenue. And we are aware of that because every time that the incremental revenue for going to free-to-air broadcasters gets smaller and smaller, the pressure comes to us on managing our tariffs. And we try as much as possible, and we're working with the broadcasters to see how we can assist them with that. Going into the, on page 30, going into specific, into the free-to-air, into the broadcasting sector in more detail, we also look at the dynamic between 2002 and 2012. There has been growth across the board of revenues of the free-to-air public broadcasters, commercial broadcasters, and subscription broadcasters, but the growth has not been the same across the board. And again, that is a dynamic that we are quite interested in, not only in assisting our partners to address, but also in us responding whenever requests are made to us. On page 31 shows the broadband penetration, and the main, most important thing is really on page, as you see that the just staying on page 31, the broadband is increasing mostly on mobile and not much of it on fixed. But what is quite interesting is on page 32 is the on-demand content that is going on to, that is starting to go onto these broadband networks. The purple line shows on-demand content using your normal, for example, satellite services. So that's your typically where you have a box at home and then it stores your movies and you can access the movies. Remember, those movies, it does not necessarily have to be entertainment. It could be educational content. It could be content related to healthcare and all sorts of other things. Content related to information about employment. That doesn't necessarily have to be movies. But it's sitting next to you, and you can access it anytime you want. What is happening there with the Green Line is that there's an increasing use of broadband networks to then get that on-demand content. That means that then there's a lot more of that content that people can then access to then further improve themselves. The page 33 is just a summary of everything that I've just mentioned now. I won't go into too much detail. Perhaps go to then specifically what are we going to do over the MTF period. That's on page 36, starting there on the FM radio. As you mentioned, that we only saw 77.3% growth in the advertising revenue of radio broadcasters. And we, with the exception of the new secondary market radio stations, we don't see and any additional community broadcasters that keep getting licensed throughout the year. There's nothing much more we'll be doing except to ensure that our systems run efficiently. At high levels of service availability. On medium wave, we, as mentioned earlier also, the regulator has licensed new medium wave services in Gauteng and Cape Town, and those deployments take long, take typically 18 even to 24 months if one starts from the ground, but we are working with the licensees to implement those the medium wave networks. Then next, on page 37, that's shortwave. Just a bit of background, there's an old facility in Meyerton, in Gauteng, that was that's the shortwave facility that was used long time ago, together with that was used long time ago to transmit it to the continent, and that's a fairly old facility, very inefficient energy wise. And they use the demand for shortwave services has decreased quite significantly. It is a facility that is being used to transmit SBS Channel Africa on the continent. But there are other international broadcasters that use that facility to transmit around the world. We are looking at rationalizing that facility to make sure that it is actually dragging down our finances. And we've been working on it. We have reduced the amount of exposure, financial exposure that we have on that process. And we're working with the Department of Communications and the SABC to see how we can bring it in line and make it sustainable. Page 38, as I mentioned earlier, the digital is a theme for us over the next 3 years, and we are working on a number of initiatives that support digital radio, specifically working with the broadcasters at the National Association of Broadcasters through and particularly under the leadership of the SABC on a DAB trial, that is Digital Audio Broadcasting Plus. Trial. It's a very interesting system because it can run in parallel even commercially with FM radio. It does allow at least for some of the congestion that is there in the metropolitan areas to be addressed. Congestion meaning that there's no frequencies available almost to get to license any new broadcasters, FM broadcasters. So we are working with them the National Association of Broadcasters and the members there on that DAB Plus trial. We are also working with a medium wave broadcaster radio pulpit on a digital version of medium wave radio that's called DRM, Digital Radio Mondial. And the again, similar to the DAB Plus, there's co-investment of all the parties involved, because there's opportunities there for commercial or putting those digital radio services in the market to run in parallel with the analog FM and even medium wave services. It's a very, very interesting project for us. Then the final one on digital radio, it's a technology that allows for both digital radio and digital mobile television. And the standard there is the same standard that has been approved, the national standard for digital television, which is the DVB-T2. And we are using DVB-T2 Lite to enable mobile television services to be provided on exactly the same infrastructure that is being used for terrestrial television for fixed reception. And that system will also be able to carry radio services there. That's radio. And then on television, on page 39, nothing much to do on television. On analog television, I must state, let's start there.
I'm worried about my time.
Okay, very, very quickly. Okay. analog, what we're just doing there is really fortifying our network. We have put some money into making sure that as we are progressing towards analog switch off, the analog television services are not compromised. On page 40, we have enhanced our approach to satellite television, created, specifically clarified our role as an enabler, removed any confusion that may have been created by particularly, let's say, ourselves on our approach to satellite television. So we are specifically an enabler of any multi-channel broadcaster or group of broadcasters for digital satellite television. Then on page 41, on the back of, again going back to our roots as a platform service provider, we are busy developing content management services that will allow for distribution of content on behalf of our broadcasters or by our broadcasters to their customers using broadband services. On page 42, we talk about our VZ service. That is a satellite connectivity service that we have we've been using to connect schools, and we have been working with a number particularly with USASA to try and connect USASA's service points. We've noticed that we have to enhance the technology to make sure that it's applicable to the particular needs that are there in a school environment or in a multiple user environment. As a result, there's some we are moving and looking at a specific technology that is a KA a technology that is more aligned with the type of usage that is required of our satellite services. Then page 43, we operate, or we have a number of facilities around the country where we do our signal distribution services. Those facilities are required by a number of people, or a number of operators, for example, to reuse. We're not just making them available, but professionalizing them, creating a complete new competency of facilities leasing to make it to make sure that we can provide all the services that are required when one goes to those facilities. It's not just about the site; it's about the power management, it's about the security management, and so on and so forth. And page 44. That's I already mentioned this earlier, that with the skills that we've developed, particularly on terrestrial television, we are exporting those skills outside of the country. Page 46, those are strategic projects. I'm going to talk about DTT. We're almost done with the rollout of the DTT network, and we will the new greenfield sites. There are four of them. Those will be completed at the end of next year. And then the network will be ready. And what we'll be doing, particularly this year, is now working with the broadcasters on the operational side of the network. Once we build the network, then we make sure that the network can support their operations fully. And on page 48, I think that's a little bit more of looking forward. I've mentioned already about the digital dividend. The digital dividend requires at least migration of two bands, at least the 800 mega, 800 and the 700 bands, that in order for the digital dividend to be released, and that will need to be done on the signal distribution network. And we are keen to start working with the industry, the regulator, and other interested parties to plan for the implementation of the digital to digital migration. Okay. On the finances, on page 50, I'm doing so with the authority of the CFO. just to give a bit of background, based on a bit of our history, we did have a fairly a tough history until 2010, and we have been on a fairly good, not done badly over the last 4 years or so, but we have put some metrics on. I mean, we're also looking at the what's coming in front of us, the demands on us for efficiency of our assets, for example, efficiency of all our operating costs. So we have a number of metrics that we use to ensure that we can deliver those efficiencies to our customers. So on page 52, for example, some of those metrics there. We look at the metric on the return on net assets. That's a key metric of our performance. We do run our own bottom line. We're supposed to be sustainable. We do not go to the national fiscals to cover our operating costs. So all those, the basic measurements out of an income statement are important for us. And then we look particularly at the efficiency or productivity metrics on assets, on cost of sales, which are the operating costs that are directly related to the delivery of services. And then the overhead costs, which are the administrative costs. And we keep track of those, and our attempt is always to make sure that those metrics are improved over the years. On page 53, it's if I could just maybe, that's our income statement there. Perhaps we could go to page 54, which is slightly bigger. The 3 years of the MTF period are there, where it says financial year 2014-2015, which is this current financial year, and then 2015-2016, and then 2016-2017. We project an earnings before interest and tax of 150 million. This is on a fairly tight set of finances, tight control of our costs, and some risks on the revenues there. As we mentioned earlier, a number of these things that we do are based on things that may sometimes are not within our control. Just to go back maybe on page 53, we just wanted to highlight something small there, is that if you look at the 2015 column, there will be three columns there. Under the 2015 section, there was 2014, which is forecast and budget, and then 2015, where you see analog, you see DTT, and then you see budget. The DTT part there, that reflects dual illumination. The dual illumination costs come to about 108 million, and currently we have funds for about 30 million. And in that, and so we have a a shortfall of running the terrestrial or the digital network of about 78 million, but this issue has been acknowledged quite positively by the both the department and National Treasury, and will be addressing it. On page 55, that is our statement of financial position, our balance sheet, and we do project a fairly healthy balance sheet. There are a couple of things that have been removed there that have left our balance sheet. For example, the on the non-current liabilities, we used to have post-retirement medical aid liability that was unfunded, and we've been able to deal largely with it, and we'll be removing it from our balance sheet moving forward. The balance sheet of Centec, the equity, we're glad to say that the company has doubled its equity over the last 5 years, and that is a reflection of in the recovery that we have experienced there. The equity has come to just over a billion rand. The balance sheet is really a balance that is based on cash reserves and also on the assets, with very little of, in fact, almost no non-current liabilities. All the current liabilities are fully catered for. The cash that we have in there, I'll talk about our capital budget, our CAPEX plan just now. On page 56, that's the cash flow. We'll be able to generate sufficient cash flows to be able to run as a going concern moving forward. And you'll see that the cash flow statement there on page 56 shows that most of the major, the DTT project in particular, will have been completed by the end of this 2013-2014 financial year. And the cash flow on or the money that will be used from investment point of view will be money coming out of our own funds to enhance our own network. Then on page 58, that's a summary of page 58 provides a summary of how we are then using our capital expenditure. That is to support our customers in increasing the scope of their operations, meaning that the broadcasters can come to us and say that they want to expand, subject to them getting the regulatory approvals. They don't have to worry about funds. We can build the network, and then they can pay us on the basis of tariffs. We're also putting funds to reduce our operating costs. Some of the old equipment that is there that is energy efficient, not environmentally friendly, that takes a lot in terms of maintenance, that costs a lot, eventually ends up costing our broadcasters a lot. We are replacing those that equipment so that we can be able to better respond to pressures from our broadcasters on costs. We're also putting money on improving our own internal efficiencies to work better, and then finally to transform our business capabilities, both in terms of the platform capabilities, but also on these trials that we just talked about on the digital systems. Page 59 is a breakdown of the funding in terms of the programs, the expansion, maintenance, and a provision for incidentals. For example, an incidental could be a community broadcaster coming in requiring a new build that we may not have budgeted for. And the top table there is the capital program using the central funds, and then the middle one is using external funds. You'll see that there's still some money out of the National Treasury for DTT infrastructure, and then the 37 million there is the one, which is the one that I mentioned earlier, which is the remaining funds from the 2010 World Cup that we're using for the disaster recovery. Then lastly, Honorable Chairs, moves there with our KPIs. Our KPIs this year are, we used to have quite a number, a large group of KPIs, almost 40. And we have learned and through advice, particularly of the honorable body here, to reduce them. So we have a few KPIs at a corporate level. It does not mean that there are things that we're not doing. For example, some of the initiatives that I mentioned in shareholder priorities are embedded in our operating plans. These are very, very high level KPIs that sit at a corporate level. The first one is on page 61 there, is installation of VSATs for connectivity. The second one is installation of the same type of systems to enhance for schools connectivity. These are cases where we go into a school, again working with the department, which works then again with the basic education and then the professional departments of education. And we provide a full suite of an ICT lab. We refurbish a lab, we provide the furniture, we provide the computers, we provide connectivity, free connectivity for at least 5 years. So we intend to do so on at least 14 schools this year. A KPI on, two KPIs related to customer service, one related to the network services, and then the other one related to feedback from our customers and our stakeholders. That's on page 61. And then on page 62, those are a series of KPIs on people. As part of our transformation, we embarked some time ago in 2011 on a deep internal transformation of our human resources. So we keep make public our progress on our human resources transformation. KPI on performance management, minimum in particular this year of a performance of 3 out of a scale of 5. A KPI on talent management, specifically here this is in respect of training programs. We did a comprehensive skills audit last year and we have a training program and we want to make sure that everybody is trained to be able to deal with the gaps that have been identified. And then we are always looking at improving the levels of employee engagement and satisfaction. The last set of KPIs then deal with the finances. The first one on return on net assets. The second one on the earnings before interest and tax. And then the last one is a statement of our intention to continue to run a clean administration. The page 64, page 64 onwards, those are the KPIs broken down on a quarterly basis as required. And
thank you very much, Dr. Mahapi, for the presentation. I know it took longer than we anticipated for the presentation to take place. I'm going to open for members to engage with the presentation. We'll definitely take comments, questions. Honorable Mackenzie, Honorable Shin, Honorable Sedi, I'm doing better today. Honorable Kekana, Honorable Dozi. Hey, I gave compliment to myself. Honorable next to Kekana. Ugwana, Honorable Mabe, Honorable Dikotesi, and Honorable Masako will be the last one. In that order, Honorable Members.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. And thank you, Doctor, for your presentation. It was very comprehensive. Firstly, if I can just commend you on the financial management of your entity, I think it's public knowledge where you've come from and the difficulties you faced, and congratulations on your unqualified audit. It's good to have a state-owned entity that is self-funded also going forward and not a drain on the public purse. In terms of your infrastructure, is it safe to say that you are ready to go ahead with the transition from analog to digital terrestrial television? You're waiting for another entity.
No, Mackenzie, really, move your mic a bit to your mouth.
Is that better? And you have the infrastructure in place, from what I can see in terms of your presentation, at least to cover around 84% of potential viewers. So you are ready to roll. What is stopping you, or is there? Can you tell me which entity is actually holding you back from proceeding? Then, in terms of the amount of capex you're spending and opex on maintaining the analog system, can you give me an idea of how much the money you're spending while waiting for DTT to be rolled out? Thanks very much.
Thank you, Jefferson. Dr. Mahapi, in the strategic plan, corporate plan here, you talk about serious financial risks for Centec and the broader ICT industry should the start of DTT dual illumination be delayed beyond 2014. That's this year. Can you please detail for us what those financial risks are? And then also please explain whether we actually do still need a dual illumination period. I understand that the technicality, that, you know, it's good to have a trial or a period of this, but one looks at whether we're meeting the deadline of next year, whether we have any hope of meeting that, and what would be the impact if the broadcasting on the broadcasting industry, if the signal was just suddenly switched off next year? I mean, can we do it? Because they're not getting their act together. The broadcasters and the set-top box people are delaying this entire process. And if we just actually switched it off and made all that the white spaces, particularly, I'd like some of your thoughts on use of white space, but available to other network users. There's a desperate need for people to get out there, and perhaps we should actually not be held to ransom, as it were, by the broadcasting industry. Some people see it's a conspiracy to keep video on demand services behind and other network services. Whether we can actually, you know, actually just sort of let them catch up as and when they will, and not worry too much about them. There seems to be a tremendous disconnect between what we need for DTT and the regulatory environment. Can you please go into some of why we still, you know, you're at odds with the ICASA on an awful lot of issues. Why is there that? Okay, look, we're still waiting for some policy review, and we've had disruption in the Department of Communications over some years. But, you know, how ready are we actually leaving the public broadcaster out of this, ready to actually switch over to digital broadcasting or digital networks, so that the rest of the economy, the real benefits of DTT are going to come through economic growth, through the wide use of digital networks. We're actually holding that back. Can you please give us some your views on whether we can actually go ahead without the broadcasters? Thank you.
Thanks, Chef. Few issues that I picked up as you were making a presentation. One is the issue of the increase in shares on by private commercial radio vis-a-vis the decline by public commercial radio. Why that kind of a situation in the process of you doing the investigation? Perhaps at the committee, you might also want to know in terms of the number of the executives that we have in the institution. Obviously, let me also talk to the gender balance, what is the situation. Also, the one issue that is of serious concern, and this issue came up very, very sharply, Chair, as we're engaging with the Auditor General, is the increase in charges of in charges with regard to professional and consulting work that is happening in the institution. What's actually the situation in the institution? Because this issue came up very, very sharply. I would want to know why is it happening. Because looking at the slide on page 53, it seems like these charges are still going to increase going forward. Slide on page 53. Why do we have that kind of a situation in the institution? The second last one, Chair, is the termination of shortwave. It's an issue that you raised earlier on, and you are saying Pan-Africa, Channel Pan-Africa relies solely on this shortwave. I want to know what is likely to be the implications to that channel, Pan-Africa. Lastly, it's the project that you are engaged with, your 2010 legacy project and a whole range of other projects that you are having in the institution. To what extent are they assisting government in the area of the creation of job opportunities just for government to be able to meet its targets in that regard? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I've been covered on the transformation from analog, and I'm interested in knowing what exactly is holding us back there. And then you were talking about changes that need to be effected with regards to tariffs to make sure that that the cost is reduced. Could you expand on that? Maybe we could be brought to light about some of the things that we could follow up with regards to what exactly ought to be controlled, and so on and so forth. And then it seems to me that part of at least what I would have wanted to hear, and I think that it's an important point to keep South African companies on, particularly state entities like yourself, is a report on the type of research and innovation that you're involved in. I'm sure the committee too would be interested to know to what extent you are pushing the limits with regards to product development in ways that really result in us being much more self-sufficient and not relying on outside products. What are the products that you are? What is the type of research you are involved in? Just a broader report on that. And also, I'm hearing that you also have a project with regards to skilling. Can we get an expansion on that exactly? How many students have you taken to what universities? Are you engaged in that type of activity? Are you taking anybody outside to the best universities to come and strengthen either your own operations or the innovation that you are involved in? Sure.
Honorable Tikana.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will be quick. Mine is about professional and consulting charges. And I wanted to know that if we can have a huge budget about consulting, professionals and consulting, what is happening in the company? Are we having management? And what is the role of that management? Because I don't believe that we can employ people to relax in the offices and do nothing and spend money on consulting. We should agree from today that you will cut those consultants and many legal fees. So in fact, it needs a skills audit check. And all senior managers, they started to make us suspicious that now they are playing a javelin rugby. What we should do, all senior managers must be subjected to vetting, and it must be written with bold letters All senior managers must be subjected to vetting, and we must do a skill audit and check all the balances. And secondly, I wanted to know, in line of HR, to know whether, how many posts do you have, vacant posts do you have, because of ours is to make sure that we reduce unemployment in this country. And we know that other managers sit with those spaces, making us to fail as the leading government. And then, Chair, let me say for now, I'm covered somewhere.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. And we should also join my colleagues about the good story on the clean audit. I think it's a good thing to do, and we should continue to do that. Just a few questions and comments. The first one is that, just a question, you don't have any litigations, and if they are there, how far have you gone with them, just to get a sense of what is happening? I did not pick it up on the presentation. And from there, I think on slide page 17, on the strategic objectives, you are saying you are going to facilitate the growth and development of SMMEs as well as improve the sustainability through the use of ICT. Good. Have you identified areas in particular on the side of the SMMEs? I think just to give a fair amount of clarity. On slide page 23, one would just like to know television broadcasting market. There's a sentence there which we are saying that the regulator is expected to provide clarity on a number of key drivers of future digital television broadcasting market. When soon do we expect that to happen? So that it should not just be that would happen, but it's not certain as to started when? I think, Chair, those are some of the issues which one wanted to raise. I'm just looking the last one, but if I would delay the Chair, I would still come back if there's any need. Thanks.
I'm looking now ahead, Honorable Member. Honorable Mabe.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe I might not follow the example of other members to refer to pages because I'm having a bit of a struggle with my document. But having read it, it suffices to first ask about the DTT tariffs. At what point are we finalizing this? Because this seems to be a hold-up, especially for broadcasters. So we just need to have clarity on that and perhaps deviate a bit from what other honorable members have asked as it relates to the clean audit. You are speaking about a clean audit which with, of course, number of issues raised on fruitless and wasteful expenditures as it relates to your foreign travel. You know, there is about 1.2 million there that is being spent. So it might be something that we require a bit clarity on because that then aligns to the new term in Parliament, APP, or the annual performance. Yes, yes. So just to understand that, but the other last point, I come from a place called Phalaborwa in Limpopo province. I listen to Tobela FM when I'm in Limpopo because I like listening to late night stories. I find myself being disadvantaged when I'm in Cape Town because that program that announces who died next door and who's still alive in the community, I can't now listen to them. Is there a plan on the side of Sentech to maybe increase and expand satellite capacity so that Minister Mutambi, who listens to Mugana Lonene, Bule Mabi, who listens to Tobela FM, could still come to Cape Town and relate with the people at home and be able to phone without mass hassles? I'm saying this because Radio Sonor Grens has got maximum reach. When you listen to it, even with the falling of a pin, you could still hear what the newsreader is saying. So as part of promoting the official languages of the Republic of South Africa, we need to be seen responding to that diversity. So we might need to understand what Sentech is doing to be able to increase satellite capacity so that I can connect with the people of Phalaborwa without much doubt.
Honorable Zotete. On okay. On the issue of the master copy, we have figures here for radio listenership. Do these figures include rural areas? If yes, which rural areas? And on page 44, under operating expenditure, we have recruitment costs. Do you do recruitment for yourself or utilize services of labor consultants? And if yes, what are the reasons for using consultants? And how would you rate your contribution to job creation? The other one I'm covered by Honorable Ndlozi on the targets for skills development. Who are you targeting? And on transport cost, you have this 17.5M. It is for whatever is mentioned here. But also you pay for use of private vehicles by staff on duty, when at the same time you are leasing cars and also rent or hire. This is not a fruitless expenditure or wasteful expenditure. It is not cost effective. The manner in which you make payments of travel costs here. You lease, you hire, and at the same time you use your private driver. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Masako.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I'm in other issues I'm covered by my colleagues. On the issue of consulting, on consultants, mine will be the time frame. Shouldn't they also transfer skills and be phased out? Because as you can understand, at some stage there's a speciality expertise from them that you do not have. But those that are supposed to be in those positions, shouldn't they also be capacitating themselves to be able to take over? The issue of the cable theft, are you looking at probably substituting it with optic fiber or something so that then you minimize that? And Lukwala that I would be listening to, because Mpumalanga is affected a lot. So we can sometimes listen to the Lukwala. The issue of job opportunities, I just wanted also to know how many job opportunities do we envisage creating and by when? And also, what monitoring and evaluation strategies do we have in place to monitor, including senior management, but also your programs, your CAPEX and whatever? And what strategies also do you have on performance agreements and assessments? Because sometimes when there's an issue that comes from the AG, you find that the CEO is the one who sits with all the problems, and yet there are individuals who are responsible to have performed to ensure that the organization gets a clean audit or working towards a clean audit. And once again, also, I want to join those who congratulated you because it was on target, the 2014 deadline of the AG that yet wanted all agencies and departments to obtain, to go green, obtain a clean audit. But what good story, based on that, can you share with your other colleagues and other agencies to ensure that they also go green? The obtained clean audit, and probably what was the secret that made you to be able to obtain that? What is your main impediment to unleashing your full potential as Stantec, and how do you see us helping you in obtaining that? And lastly, on women, youth, and people with disabilities, what are the procurement policies? What is the percentage of the budget that is allocated to that sector? And also the compliance with employment equity, especially with people with disabilities, the 2%. Yeah, I think the others, as I said, Chair, have been covered. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, honorable members, for your comments and input. I think I just have a couple of issues that I just want to raise with the NTG. For me, I think as well echoing, I think what is firstly good for me is a healthy financial status of an entity helps us to move away from that point where we start dealing with issues of finances, how finances are managed, and deal with issues of performance. And I think it gives us that opportunity just to congratulate you and hope you keep this clean audit without emphasis, I think. Because sometimes we have others with unqualified with emphasis. I think you are quite, I don't know whether to use a correct word of clean, if there is such a thing. But I think that assists us. There's something that CEO and Chairperson that I did not hear you speak about, and which I would want just to get an indication what is happening. Your case in Botswana, have you paid all, because you lost the case, have you paid all the money that was required? What mechanisms are you doing to ensure that you do not have the same challenge again? That's one for me. The second issue is that you have high challenges in terms of crime related. Obviously, it's not your making, but the theft of cables and all those things that you are reflecting in your report, which is a risk going forward. One of the things that I was trying to pick up is that you have mitigation mechanisms. It doesn't seem whether there's partnership that you have with the local government, your municipalities, your ESCOM, your SAPS, to try and ensure that you do not have this risk where transmission will be affected. I tried to find that, I couldn't find it. Because it would give comfort to know that while you have picked up it's a risk area, therefore you would have done something about it, or even put mechanisms to try and deal with it. Another area that I would want us to get clarity on, or more details, the issues of intergovernmental relations. And I'm glad because we are in this, dealing with your issues. ICASA is here, the minister is here. From that point of view, SABC and everybody else is here. Because I want to understand the relations. How are we having this link with everybody else? Do we have regular meetings? Are we having MOUs? How do we operate? What binds us together? as an industry that have ways that we are working together. What brings us together? What if I'm expected to do A and I do not have to do it, which have an impact on you? How do you hold me accountable before even us as the committee come in? Because if you look at your risk areas that you have flagged, there are things that are at a risk with you. For example, your DTT and all those things, issues of uncertainty in policy, direction and all that. And they are a risk too. But it's not you who's supposed to deliver on those things. You are dependent on a sister entity to deliver on them. That's what I'm asking from a point of an institution. Do you have a mechanism that you've put in place, or even maybe later it's something that we'd have to pursue with the institution and the ministers to check how do we build that? Is there something now that we are talking on? I hope I don't go too much because I've got quite a number of things that really wanted to pick up on. The other issue that I think for me as well, and other colleagues have raised the issues of finances, how we're managing them, issues of financial relations. I'm just trying to look at my notes. But the other issue that I want to check, if you can just clarify for me, who is responsible for your low power transmission? Is it you or SABC? And I'm asking because also SABC is here, but I want to hear from you. And that's why we've requested everybody to be here, because this issue is interrelated. And certain issues, because we want, when you say it's this one, later we engage with them, you'll have to explain to us how we deal with these things. Then one thing again, you speak about, I might not go to the pages, I've got quite a number of things. You speak about the issue of non-certainty of policies and like anticipating that the policy would be in place. What is your risk as an institution should that policy not be in place in time as you are projecting? Have you done that analysis? What does it mean to you? I think the issue of shortwave has been addressed. My co-chairperson has a different expression of a shortwave somewhere in another province. A shortwave means something. So I was trying to get the details from her. Being other thing. But I think mainly for us, chairperson and CEO, there are other things that we're going to have to come back to. We might not be able to exhaust issues today. For example, we would have to come to a point where all of us sit around the table, or firstly, we would want you to come back, maybe in detail later, present your audit. You've done an audit, skills audit, and share in detail with us later. But secondly, the issue of your turnaround. You've had turnaround strategy. I think if you are able, in short now, share with us how you've been able to do that. But maybe later, we are also still going to want to have a detailed discussion as the committee, just to see how you've been able to turn around that situation, what are the areas. And then we are going to have, as well, I know that I was talking about the issue of dealing with low transmitters. But I think, again, we are going to have to deal with that in detail with all the stakeholders more than anything later. I would want to see that, that we have a specific session that we deal with that. But some of these things we are raising, obviously, you would know that we might not have enough time to deal with them in detail. So once we're done with the processes that we are doing now, we will come back and emphasize on particular areas. And some of them I've highlighted now, and others will pick up with us as we go forward. I'm not even sure if I can give them to respond. Okay. Over to you, Chairperson and CEO. We don't have any particular order. Anyone from the delegation can respond. And Minister, if there's anything you want to say, or you want to say something before they speak, okay.
Yeah. Chair, thanks for the opportunity. And to again congratulate you, all the members, for being appointed to serve to this committee. I felt I must start. You will recall, colleagues, the President on the 25th of May made an announcement on the reconsideration of the ministries. And then yesterday, the President has signed the proclamation that established these two ministries, communications and telecommunications and postal services. These are two new ministries. There's no any ministry that is a successor in title of another ministry. So when you read the proclamation, it further says that the President will be transferring the functions in terms of Section 97 of the Constitution. So as we await the President to do that, then the work must still continue. You'll remember the mandate of SANTEC as it is in the current Act is brought to provide a broadcasting signal distribution for broadcasting licenses. I felt there are these issues that we need to raise with members of the portfolio. In fact, some of the issues you have raised in your questions. Number one is that SANTEC has not yet reached agreement on the DTT tariff, as Honorable Mavi has asked with all the broadcasters. And we feel this is a matter that needs to be expedited as a matter of urgency. I think when they respond to the question, they will be able to attack the timeline as to when are they going to deal with that. Secondly, the issue that I want members of the portfolio to know is that every year, SANTEC submits a budget to Treasury to address their mandate, and every year there is a shortfall from Treasury. I think this is a matter that needs to be addressed, especially for the deficit rollout on the mandate. And the other third issue that we felt need to be attended this way, that's cross-cutting, is the issue of the dual illumination budget that should be catered for to avoid the negative consequences that will result in missing the deadline of the DTT, as members have raised. And then there was also the issue of the low-power transmitter. This has been the matter for us as a portfolio committee in the fourth parliament, that I think it should be noted that many citizens still do not have access to television and radio, as Honorable Marie has raised. And this matter should be noted and dealt with. The mandate is between SABC and SANTEC. And then they've committed in the past, in the fourth parliament, to roll out the low power transmitters. I think they must be able to explain to the portfolio how far have they moved. Also, when SABC make a presentation, they must be able to deal with that. Chair, Honorable Kubas, you have raised the issue of intergovernmental relations. That needs to be addressed right away. You know, they've got the difficulty with regard to the right of access for private property, which is being refused by certain property owners. I think my friend, Honorable Ndlozi, will say to be expropriate because but that's not what, that's an issue that they don't have access in time. As well as our own municipality, sometimes they refuse to assist SANTEC using it maybe as some sort of exorbitant revenue generation. We commit now as the department, whoever the function will be transferred to for SANTEC, either myself or my counterpart will be able to deal with that, to deal with the intergovernmental relations that affected thereof. And then we are saying also, SANTEC should finalize the standard for DTT satellite gap filler for STB. I think they should be able to share with us how far they're going to roll out that one. Chair, the issue of the use of consultants is a concern to us also. If you check page 53 of the report, especially the legal fees, when we came in as the new ministry, we had an introductory meeting with the state attorney. The state attorney has got all professionals that you might require to help you do your work. But you still find departments and entities not wanting to utilize the state attorney, the resource that government has provided. So this is the issue that we seriously want to discourage. We've got resources within linking it with the question what Comrade Honorable Member Kitana has raised, to say, the over-utilization of consultants also. I think there are reports also on the AG that members must read on the use of consultants by all government departments and entities. That's a worrying factor that we have raised on the entities that we have engaged with ourselves, which the president announced belong to us. We have said they must give us a report on the utilization of consultants. We want to analyze that report because we are appointing people who are earning lucrative salaries, but the value for money aspect for it is government, we are not receiving it. That's all that I can say.
Thank you very much, Minister. Over to you, Chairperson.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Members. We will be taking, we'll be answering
thank you very much, honorable members. I'm trying to do them in the order that they came, the questions. And where I've addressed one, I'll just refer to the answer that where we address one, I'll just refer to the answer that you've given already. The other issue of DTT, maybe just the general issue.
Thank you.
I'll answer a number of questions that have been asked around DTT, including tariffs, including what are the different drivers and so on and so forth. Essentially, there are two things that are required to get DTT going. One is to get the signal, digital signals from broadcasters into homes. And the second one is to make sure that there are receiving devices that are installed in homes. The estimate now is that there are at least 8 million TV owning households that do not have satellite TV. There are 8 million households that own TVs and do not have their subscription decoders. And those are households that need to be migrated, and they will be the first time that they get decoders in their homes. And it is quite a lot of effort there. I mean, we know that from a network point of view, we know that some of the areas will probably have to change. The configuration in the home is fairly different. You have two, for example, remote controls, two power cables, and so on and so forth. But that's where the bigger issue is. To get the decoders into homes, remember, to get the signal to get to the home, one is you have the policy, which is done with a few things to be done. You have the regulations which have been done from ICASA. You have the broadcasters who prepare the channels, and they'll be asked how ready they are. And my understanding is that they are ready to move. Then you have the network to get the signal to the homes, and that network is almost done. It's ready, and we can show. We'll give some statistics about where we are per province. So that part. But to get the decoders to homes, you start with the policy. Then you go into the specification of the standard, for example. Then you go into the specification of the set-top boxes. You have two different ways of getting the boxes into homes. One is the subsidized boxes. The other ones are the boxes that show up in the retail stores. Then you have the logistics system that gets the boxes closer to homes. So how do they get to the retail shop? Some of them will get to the post office. It will be accessible through the post offices. Then you have the installers that will have to be trained, and then they have to go to their individual homes to do so. And you are now, remember in the first set, you have one ICASA, you have the public broadcaster, you have ETV, you have MNET, and let's say five other community broadcasters, and CENTEC, let's say. And if there's maybe Opicom, if there's some provision, you could have at least two more, or one or two more, one more signal distributor. So a very small, let's say no more than 10 entities that are dealing with getting signals to homes. But if you look at the number of entities involved in getting the boxes to homes, and the scale of that, it's 8 million homes plus times very many people who are involved in that. So that's a fairly complex system on its own. So the first answer, the question was, what is holding us back? Are we ready? Yes, we are ready. There is definitely nothing holding the first part to be done. in fact, as we speak right now, you know, under a very old test license from ICASA with the public broadcaster, you can go, the public broadcasting signals are available on the DTT network. Every time when we say we have lit or we have done with a particular province or with a particular site, we are testing with the public broadcasting services, at least the three channels. So from a network point of view, there's nothing that is, from a network and broadcaster point of view, there's nothing stopping us from getting the signals to cover the country. The second issue was then about the relationships that involve CENTEC and the broadcaster and the regulator. There's a first, number one is that I think that those relationships are working very, very well. ICASA has created a structure called JSEC, the Joint Spectrum Advisory Group. I think among other things they deal with spectrum-related matters affecting the broadcasting industries. There are other matters that they deal with. And that's where all the broadcasters and the signal distributor and everybody who's interested in the system comes in and talks about not only issues around the current configuration of the frequency plan, for example, but also thoughts about the future configuration of the DTT network. So that's working very well. And our team, I mean, we have people going there to those sessions on a regular basis. Then there is, I can't comment about the discussion that may or may not happen between the ICASA and the regulator and the broadcasters on content-related matters. There's a main issue around the tariffs, which is an issue between CENTEC, the broadcasters, and the regulator. The way the regulations are set is that we, the broadcasters, first choose their signal distributor, and that is on the basis of a number of things, including the tariffs. Then, and the commercial contracts, and the, for example, the service level agreements. Then the broadcaster submits finalized agreements to the regulator, and the regulator then will look at a number of things, including, among others, from a center perspective, is whether we are able to meet the rollout targets. If we're not able to meet the rollout targets within 3 months of the announcement of performance period, then there are certain steps that the regulator can take, which then allow the regulator then to go into tariff regulation. Just for the regulator to go into tariff regulation outside of the DTT regulations, then it does so under the ECA, and there's those provisions under Chapter 10 of the ECA. We are not there yet. Currently, we are still working on the basis of the DTT regulations, not on Chapter 10 of the ECA. Where we are, we have made quite a lot of progress. I'm not sure whether I'm at liberty to mention. I'd like not to mention the names of the customers, of the broadcasters, but I will if I'm asked to. But we have made significant progress with the broadcasters. I must say, I mean, there was a big meeting facilitated. Let me just point out with the leadership of the SABC. Over the last 2 to 3 weeks, and significant progress was made there on issues of tariffs. We are quite confident that within the next month, at least, hopefully, with the SABC will have been completed. Within the same type of period with ETV would have been completed. We have a lot of things that we are discussing with MNET. And then community broadcasting is a slightly different thing. We have to have discussions with the Department of Communications, MDDA, and so forth about what the implications of DTT is for community broadcasting. Just to give you an example, that the way the frequency plan is set up is that a community broadcaster that used to be on one transmitter, let's say in Gauteng, to TV, is now it becomes available on 10 transmitters, the whole of Gauteng, and we have to do things that are not natural to a DTT system to limit them to that one transmitter that they used to be on. And that can destabilize the system. So the natural coverage of community broadcasting services increases quite significantly under DTT. So that's a discussion that I think we've registered there and that will be having. But our key priority really is at least to get done with the SABC TV and at least for the first two, we believe that the time periods are about a month or 2 months. In terms of relationships, I mean, I think the relationships are very, very, very good between ourselves and the broadcasters. When there's nothing that we are complaining about here or we're reporting anybody here at all. Around DTT, the dual illumination. What we have said, I mean, the concept of dual illumination is it starts with dual illumination as specified in the DTT regulations. And that is dual illumination of the channels. So it's a broadcaster focus definition. So it is dual illumination of the SABC channels, ETV, and I think two MN channels. And then community broadcasting, they also, if they were to dual illuminate. So it's a channel-based dual illumination. What we have said, though, is that there is network dual illumination, meaning that the first transmitter that Center Cares was lit in 2008, and from the minute it went up, it was incurring cost. So, by the way, the regulatory dual illumination starts at the point where the minister makes a pronouncement on the performance period. That's where the obligation starts, and the right, and so on and so forth. So, for all intents and purposes, at the moment, there is no, we haven't yet started the period of regulatory dual illumination, but there is no performance period as yet. However, it is a fact that Centec has been running a network and has been building a network and running this network since 2008. So we can't avoid the fact that there are two networks at the moment that are incurring costs to be run. And that fall outside of the content-based regulation. And so we're talking about this, the cost of running the digital network that we cannot pass to anybody because we can't pass it to anyone. So the risk that we're talking about is essentially a broader risk that if we are running this digital network, and yes, it has value in a sense that if one was to, we are able to work with the broadcasters for them to test their systems. We are using that network to be able to test our new operating models. Anybody who wanted to test a set-top box, for example, would be able to test a set-top box on the network that is there. So it has value, but it comes at a cost. At the point where the cost is, if we are to carry that cost, then we have to pay for those costs from something, and that something is our current business. And it may not be fair. It is not fair for us to take money from running the analog services for us take money from running the FM services to go and just plug this hole of this network that is still to provide services in the future. Over the previous years, the National Treasury has put money for the dual illumination, and so we don't think that the risk as it is right now, without, for example, in this financial year, the 78 million, the risk still sits with us. But we think that we're able to cover that 78 million. But I think the sense for everybody is that there are these real costs of any kind of delays, and that's what we mentioned in the corporate plan. The flip side of that is that that's another question that came is as we have these analog networks that we don't want to put money into them as much as possible, but we want to keep the services up. So if we can avoid putting money into them, we would, because we're going to switch them off. So the question is how much capex are we putting on the analog TV? I'll talk about capex because OPEX is quite compressed there. We have on capex at least we have isolated that it's we've budgeted about 40 million for analog TV related work over the MTF period. The there was an issue again of what happens if we can switch off. We have the networks there. The set-top box are not in homes, and it's 8 million homes. It has happened in some countries, Tanzania, they went in, they switched off, and it's not a good thing. I mean, it's just you are denying people basic things, and they have to switch back on. And sometimes the decoders were there, and then they had not moved into homes, enough of them had moved into homes. So the switch off is really a switch off on the basis of homes, households, having migrated themselves in order to maintain continuity of the services. In terms of where we are, for migration purposes, we have completed Gauteng. So Gauteng is ready. We've completed Free State. It is ready. We have completed, there's one site in, we've completed Limpopo from a migration point of view. Limpopo is ready to be switched off if we're to be asked which order. There's one site in KZN in Ulundi, which is not ready. Otherwise, KZN is ready. There's one site in Mpumalanga that is not ready. Otherwise, the rest of Mpumalanga is ready. The work that we've been doing now is mostly on Eastern Cape. I think there's about three sites that are not ready for migration. And then the bulk of the current work is in Northern Cape and then Western Cape. And we've just had issues there with weather and some other technicality. But for all intents and purposes, at least the three provinces that I mentioned, Free State, Gauteng, and Limpopo, are ready fully. And you know, a switch off can happen if set-top boxes are there and people will not lose services.
Northwest.
I mentioned Northwest. One site needs to be done. There's one site to be done. Mpumalanga one site needs to be done. And one site in KZN.
Thank you.
The white spaces should not affect this whole thing as far as we understand. I think the main thing is the digital dividend. That is the main output of the migration. Yes. Yeah. So a legislative dividend again depends on the principle applied to analog switch off. And analog switch off, if you say you can't switch analog switch off until the decoders are in the homes, then that is the those are the dependencies. The CFO will deal with the finance related questions. Let me just run through the other matters. The CFO will also cover other operational matters, and of course our board members will also cover the rest of the questions there. On the increasing share of or market share dynamics, I think we can't comment much about why it's happening. It's not really our area. What our interest is really to understand those market dynamics and be able to respond accordingly to our different customers to assist them as and when they require assistance. Essentially, is getting information to understand our customers better. Particularly with the SABC, it's about we do share a common public service mandate on universal access. And I mean, the question was universal access to that diversity of radio services. I think our honourable member talked about. We have been working with the SABC on a program of expanding the radio services. We understand we have all the maps, we have all the data about the different coverages of SAFM, RSG, and so on and so forth. And that program we're working on, in the short term though, you did mention satellite. All the SABC radio services are available on satellite. And they will be part of the DTT system. Remember that DTT, you get the SABC TV services and all the SABC radio services terrestrial. And all the SABC radio and TV services will also be available on satellite, particularly for people who don't have access to terrestrial networks. But because they're on satellite, They are then available everywhere. So if you wanted to listen to any of your radio station, you can certainly pick it up from satellite free to air. On shortwave, the intention of the shortwave strategy is to protect Channel Africa, is to make sure that Channel Africa continues. Even if we say that every other service that is running there is dragging us down, the important thing is to make sure that Channel Africa itself is works. Okay. I'll come to the HR issues later. I just wanted to deal with the business issues there. The question was how to the issues facing community broadcasters. I think I was asking. And so the cost there. What happens is, and how we can assist in probably bringing the cost down further. The signal, the cost cost of running the stations themselves, and typically the MDB I think assists the community broadcasters with those running costs, and then the cost of signal distribution. What happens is there is that the Department of Communications provides a subsidy to some community broadcasters on signal distribution costs. So we are looking at the resulting costs facing the community broadcasters for signal distribution. And there are community broadcasters that, because of the subsidy from the department, end up not paying any signal distribution fees. There are about 51% of the community broadcasters pay $5,000 or less. But we understand that those costs are getting to be high, given the market share dynamics. And in the interest, we will be working with the Honourable Minister has mentioned in previous statements about the need to support community broadcasters, for example, around content syndication. Given the large listenership, around 25% listenership, it should be possible to create facilities that make it easy for content to get to community broadcasters, where community broadcasters can then get the financial benefit. The same system can also be used to enhance the ability to collect advertising revenues. Again, that's something that there are solutions that are possible there. In terms of research and innovation, we're doing it in a staged way, not to go too far out, such that it does not, what we do does not have application, at least in a short to medium time. So we have certain things that we do internally. For example, it's on the mobile TV, on DVB-T2 Lite. That area is still under development. To the extent that, the development, for example, is that the phones that we have, without any additional facilities, should be able to carry digital television. That's an area of development, and it's an area that is in development at a standard level and also at an implementation of devices. So we do get involved there, but what we do is to build the networks and test the networks and potentially look at work with people who are then developing devices to be able to test those devices, because our interest is to make sure that the devices used for consuming mobile television are not separate to the devices used for consuming any other communication service. But we don't get into the research and development of devices, we just do the networks. So we do that internally. For example, the DRM with the medium wave, we do it internally, and we do it in partnership, in this case, with the customer. DAB Plus, internally, again, with the broadcasters. We then go out a little bit. We have a collaboration with the CSIR on then something slightly different, which is like something that requires a little bit more analysis. And this is, for example, application of L-band technologies, for digital television. In a way, we are looking at the issues facing community broadcasting. On DVB, on current configurations can be very, very costly. So the work that we're doing with the CSIR is to how is to look at how we can provide slightly more cost-efficient ways of providing for community broadcasting without obviously changing anything about quality. It's still all everything is standard based. Then the last part of research and development is when we work with that goes into the skills development, where we work with tertiary institutions. We went out and sort of on an open process looking for tertiary institutions to work with on a number of criteria. And we've picked two, met the criteria. And what we do there is, I'll answer the question about what the skills development. We sponsor, there was a program that we stopped to restart. So this is something that we're going to be starting afresh at the beginning of the academic year, January. We'll sponsor undergraduate students, we'll sponsor postgraduate students, and then we'll sponsor research programs at these institutions. These research programs will be slightly, a little bit out, meaning that it may be research programs on things that may be applicable in the medium to long term, as opposed to everything that I've said that is in the short to medium term and that has immediate value for the industry. Litigation. Litigation, I'll deal with it also on the question of eBotswana. Is this still the only thing that is really left on eBotswana is the issue of damages, and we still have to get guidance from the courts on that. We have always made provision in our financial statements on the estimate of the damages at the time. In terms of and that provision was done actually some time ago, so it won't affect the financials. But I think the most important thing is what are we doing to avoid that? That's happening. I mean, it actually starts with having a sound financial company. Well, the reason why this thing happened was largely because the company, I think, ran out of money to maintain its operations and did not upgrade its systems. And these systems have to be upgraded on a regular basis. And people then had decoders that could deal with the old systems, and what then had to happen was that the entire base of the old decoders then had to be taken out. I mean, the old system became so old that you couldn't just upgrade it anymore. You had to upgrade it and also change all the decoders that had been deployed, and it became even a more costly exercise. So the best thing to do is to run the operation financially well. Make sure that you do your maintenance. Make sure that you cover all the costs of operating, of running the cleaning operation. We also our operations team under our COO regularly will visit the countries, particularly the countries that we know targeted, which is Botswana and Zimbabwe. We get regular feedback. We have contact directly with the regulators in those countries, and we they've committed to alert us immediately when something goes wrong, because the court order essentially says that we must make sure and we must take all it's our best endeavor to avoid these things happening.
To others to respond.
Yes, yes, all right.
Thank you. On the issue of professional and consulting services, just to notice that as part of the instruction note that was issued by National Treasury on cost containment measures, all institutions had to come up with a consultancy reduction plan, which we've also done. So I think This year, obviously, we still have a bit of consultants that we're using, but going forward, we've come up with a plan in order to reduce this to a minimal level. Just to notice that the 22 million that is included in the corporate plan for 2014-15, it includes external audit fee of around 4.3 million. It also includes a direct emolument and consulting is only 14 million, and out of this 14 million, we are going through a functional upgrade of our SAP system that we use for accounting purposes and management information purposes. And obviously, as part of the development of that system, it needs we need to appoint assurance service providers from an internal audit perspective and external audit perspective, and also just to manage the project. So majority of that 14 million relates to that. There's obviously a bit of cost sourcing that we do for internal audit, and that is also included in the 14 million. I think we can then provide further detail in terms of the consultancy reduction plan. There's an issue that was asked around the recruitment costs in terms of using agencies. Normally we advertise our posts in newspapers and other media. To an extent we do use recruitment agencies, but mainly for senior positions. But that is at a very limited scale. So that's something that we can provide further information in terms of the breakdown and other things. If we look at the transport cost, there was an issue to say we hire, we use own vehicles, and we also lease. So the leasing charges that is included in our budget is not only for very limited, it's for leasing of vehicles, because we have moved away from leasing vehicles. Instead, we are going into outright purchase of vehicles. So that leasing includes a cost relating to leasing of buildings that we have, not only the leasing of vehicles. The other issue is that if we look at the travel and subsistence, it will also include your accommodation, your venue hire, all the other costs. So that, I think, is because of the way we've defined our accounts or the chart of accounts in our system, where we lump things together, and then we can give a breakdown in terms of what are the lower level chart of accounts that are included in the different line items. I think those were the main issues that were raised in terms of our finances. Obviously, we will continue to make sure that we maintain the clean audit, we reduce non-compliance issues that lead to fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure. So that's something that we are doing. We are continuously making sure that there is a reduction in that area. Vacant posts, I think from the top of my head, we've got around 529 subcomplements, and our vacancies, or the total number of employees that were, total establishment that is funded, is around 575. So the difference between the two, I think, is around 50 something, and those are the posts that we want to fill in the current financial year. So the issue of the gender balance,
we may have one mic on.
The issue of the gender balance is something that we are obviously looking at. If you look at the senior management or executive, the level below EXCO, we have, I think, around three or four women as compared to six or so men. So I think we are making sure that when we recruit or when there are vacancies, we do make sure that we fill the senior positions with women. and we've got a new executive for technology. Previously it was occupied by a man, and now it's a female black person. So I think that's something that we are looking at and making sure that we comply to the equity employment plan. Thank you.
Okay, there's then there are a couple of other questions I think around regulatory certainty and the risk there, enterprise development, job opportunities. The on regulatory issues, I think that's always a question that comes up about the regulatory certainty, and I mean the job of a regulator is very difficult, and we accept that. And from a point, with regulatory certainty, you can plan better, and we can come here and say that the chances of achieving this kind of objects over a 3 to 5 year period are so much. For example, we could come and say we plan to put so many community broadcasters. If you wanted to have our financial plan, if you wanted to have an operational plan about how many community broadcasters we want to support. But it's important that we, when before we come here, we have aligned with ICASA on the process for doing so. That's just one element, is slightly more operational. But right now, there are a lot of things that are changing. I mean, the ICT policy review, I think, will influence a lot of things, will change the landscape quite significantly. And there are questions, again, I suppose, about the role of a signal distributor, the traditional signal distributor, in this converged world, where the likes of your mobile operators or your telecoms and so on and so forth also express an interest in carrying content. That is more of a policy strategic issue that may eventually affect us through regulations in one way or another. I think there was a question came up in a couple of times, or a couple of times. It's about the cable theft and what you are doing about it. Whether can we use different technologies? Yes, there's places where we are starting to use fiber. Are we aligning ourselves with the other law enforcement agencies? Yes, we are. We have a specialist now security function within the organization that is working with other functions, external functions, to protect the networks that we run. We also, I must state that our community liaison has also improved quite significantly, where we make sure that we prevent things from happening later by engaging communities as early as possible, because all these things may happen later. But if the communities were involved in building and are also involved in managing some of these things, then they take ownership. I think a question on performance management and monitoring of the execution of strategy. Our performance management system cascades, so that at one point, anything that is in the corporate plan gets expressed through the structure of the company, such that there's no one who is exposed on their own, and that any function or any outcome is supported by enough people.
Worried about my time, you've taken me 3 hours.
There's so many questions. Okay, thank you.
Can you really summarize whatever we just did?
Okay, and lastly, I think the last question that we haven't answered is around enterprise development. As you mentioned, I mean, the first thing was to create awareness about what we do, and we operate in a lot of in all parts of the country, and make sure that the services that we get, the customers that we get as much of them locally as possible. There's a lot of training that we'll have to do on the, because our things are quite specialist. It's a fairly long process, but we are quite committed to it. Thank you.
members, in light of our time, I'm not going to take follow-up questions. I think what we it's very clear for us is that there is a need for further engagement with the CENTEC in detail on the issues that we are picking up. Do follow up, and I think we'll definitely communicate. I think once we're done with our budget process, we'll have to come back because there are quite a number of issues that we have to deal with that relates to their area of work. I'm going to request that we take a 10-minute break just to stretch our legs. I know it has been quite a long 4:30. It's not healthy. Let's take a 10-minute break and then immediately, please let's be prompt on time, and then we start with MTPA. Thank you.